If the plan doesn't work, change the plan, but never the goal.
And I was able to make it to Stehekin, which is about 50 miles from there, 50 or 60. And the only reason I was able to do that, I realize now, is because I was taking like 7 or 8 Advil each day, pounding Advil the entire time to relieve the pain. And I was confident the first day. I was able to do a 20-mile day, which wasn't the best idea. And by the time I got to Stehekin, my knee was throbbing, and I knew it only got harder at that point. So going south from Stehekin, you hit Section K, which is all the way to Stevens Pass. And that's notorious as being the second hardest section after the Sierra. And going into that, it was a mental block, and my knee was killing me. I got about 3 miles south of Stehekin and ended up calling it there because I was feeling shooting pain in my knee.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail, Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, who was last on the podcast way back in May of 2021 during season 2. I can't believe it's been that long. Welcome back to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Matt Schmutz Lyons. How's it going, Schmutz?
I'm great. It's good to be back. Excited to talk trail, and yeah, it has been a while, so happened, and yeah, ready to chat. Yeah,
that's like a year and a half.
I know. I didn't expect it to be that long. I don't know. Ideally, this would have been a year earlier. So a lot happened, and I'm happy to fill you in on that.
Okay. Now, I already gave away your trail name for our listeners who may not have listened to your episode before. So why don't you give us the backstory on Schmutz? How'd you come by that?
Yeah, so I ended up getting that name on the Appalachian Trail in 2019. I did a Nobo through hike back then, and I was hiking with a group from day one. I met them the first night at the Stover Creek shelter down in Georgia, and we hiked for a while, and I met this guy named Aquaman, who later became a really good friend of mine, and we ended up being roommates after the trail. And after the first week, he noticed that the tent I was carrying, which was a 5.5-pound freestanding, absolute monster of a tent. I ended up setting that up every night and shaking it out above my head. And I kept saying I'm getting all the schmutz out of it just because I, for some reason, thought that word was hilarious. And so he's like, that's the one. That's what we're calling you, schmutz. So that's how I got that name. It stuck with me, and I carried it onto this trail that I hiked this year.
Now, Schmutz, is your family from the Midwest? Your parents from the Midwest?
No, East Coast.
East Coast, because my mom used that term as well, Schmutz. I remember that from childhood. She's from the Midwest. I wonder if there was some kind of maybe Midwestern tradition behind that word.
Yeah, I've heard from quite a few people that it means basically the same meaning as dirt, or just like being dirty. And I hiked with a woman from the Netherlands this summer, and she was telling me that they use it a lot to describe dirt over in Europe. So that's about all I know about it, but I guess it makes sense and it's fitting for a through hike. So
yeah, I've always heard it used as in, hey, you got a little bit of schmutz on your face or on your shirt.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of something you got to get rid of. So
Doc, you should hear how many times I say that. I use my trail name a lot in conversation when I'm on the trail. And people are like, you're ridiculous.
Nice. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, you've obviously been on the podcast before. So you know that we have the pro tip inside of the week. Just giving you a reminder on that. We get towards the end of the episode. I'll turn to you and look to you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Got it. Thanks again.
Hey, a few things have changed since the last time you've been on the podcast, including these cool intros recorded by my daughter, Half Calf.
Okay.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
So we're going to start off with the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Six Moon Designs. And I think you're familiar, but for our listeners out there who may be listening in for the first time, here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike or a four-month hike of the PCT, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So Schmutz, what is your must-bring piece of gear out there? What do you have to have with you?
Oh, man. So when you're out on the trail, I think one of the biggest things or biggest parts of the thru-hike is eating food and getting calories. So if I were to go out there and I didn't have my spork or some utensil to eat food, I think I would have to get off trail just because it's something I always need. You never know when one of your buddies is eating something you want a bite of. You just reach over, take a bite of that, and you can just scoop peanut butter straight from the jar. So spork is probably my main piece of gear that I wouldn't go anywhere without, just to make sure you're getting those calories and replenishing. So get yourself a spork.
Yes. Schmutz, we've had like 220 episodes. I think this is the first time we've heard of a spork being the must bring piece of gear. So congratulations on that. Way to go.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you can sleep on the ground. Insulation's one thing, shelter's one thing, but if you're not eating food, what are you doing out there, you know?
That's right. Does it have to be a long-handled spork, or you don't mind getting your knuckles dirty?
I mean, if we're out there in the woods, you can get your knuckles dirty, but I like the long handle just because a lot of things you're eating, you have to dig deep down. Like the freeze-dried meals, I've noticed they've actually adapted those. They made them a little bit shorter. They used to be really tall back then. Mountain House is really getting on that, but I have seen some companies still with the really long bags, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of defeating for people with a short spork, you know?
So, I mean, you still have to put the same amount of water into the bag. So are they, instead of making it tall, are they making it long?
Yes. So I have noticed it is a little bit longer, but it also makes it more stable. So if you're putting it down to hydrate, it's not going to tip over as easy. So it's kind of a double whammy there.
Nice. Now let's get into some theoreticals here. If you had forgotten your spork, you're out in the middle of nowhere, or your spork broke, or it washed away in a stream, whatever the accident is, you're no longer with a spork. What is a suitable replacement out there? What should people be looking to possibly replace their spork with some kind of natural item, something found out there in the wild?
Well, I think it depends what section of trail you're on. So if you're, say, in the Sierra and there isn't much vegetation around and you're basically in the element and you need something to eat your mountain house, you could find a rock of some sort and just kind of make sure it's nice and clean. And then go in there with the rock. I have seen people use sticks before to kind of, if you have a knife, you could carve or whittle a stick into a spoon shape, or you could just freehand it. You just go right in there, embrace it.
Embrace the sock. That's right. So,
yeah. I mean, you got to get creative, right?
Nice. Just make sure your fingers are clean.
Right. Right.
Yeah. All right. Hey, did we do the hiking pole last time you were on?
I mean, I actually listened to some recent ones. Yeah, I listened to some recent episodes. And I'm like, I didn't get that privilege. So that's awesome.
Well, I'm glad we have circled back to give you that opportunity. Now, I'm not sure which ones you've listened to, but we do have two sets of questions. And since you have not participated at all, you're eligible for either set of questions. I'm going to give you a choice. All right?
Ready? All right. Yeah. Okay.
So the first set of questions, this is a 7-question poll. Hiking pole. Oh, and you know what? I'm doing Half Calf a little bit of misjustice here. Let me injustice.
It's the hiking pole.
There we go. Thank you. It's a 7-question survey. It's going to help me rate you on a scale from 1 to 100 in terms of your sanity, with 100 completely sane and 1 being completely insane.
Okay. So the lower the number, the more insane.
That's correct. You're like one of the first guests to get that concept. You usually think that, you know, the higher the score, the more insane you are, but you listen.
Right.
So props to you. So as a long trail through hiker, you've already done the AT, you've done the PCT now. You already lose 25 points right off the top because there's a certain level of insanity that goes along with that. So the highest,
they're 12 and a half points each. Is that what we're doing?
No, you know, I just do a flat 25 if you've done
all right.
So
that's fair.
I don't want to penalize you too much. So the highest score you can get is 75.
Okay. All right.
All right. So Schmutz, if I were to ask your parents, you know, where would Schmutz fall on the sanity scale? What score would they give you?
Oh man, I feel like I put on a good sane mask when I get off trail. So I don't know. I think they'd probably put me, let's see, I'd say around 30, 35.
35. Yeah. That's like mostly insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm their son. I'm going to be pretty insane to them being all young and whatnot, you know?
I like how you led into that. I put on a pretty good mask. So like 30.
I mean, if I didn't, I feel like it'd be more like a one or a two.
But. Yeah. You just kind of gave us a reveal, a look into your mind there. Schmutz thinks he's probably in the 5 to 10 range, because if he puts on a good mask, he can get all the way up to 30.
We'll see. We'll see what happens, Doc. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So here are the two sets of questions. One is related strictly to hiking. It's the hiking poll. So these questions, for people who have not taken the poll before, they usually get the hiking questions. We want to hear what their perspective is on different aspects of hiking. The other set of questions, questions from set B, those are questions related to the big issues that we're currently wrestling with in society. We could probably devote an entire episode to any one of these questions. On some of these questions, you might be able to devote an entire podcast. But
sure.
You have your choice, set A or set B.
Man, I mean, I feel like I have to go with the hiking. I don't want to be too cliche, but we're going to go hiking.
I think that's fair. I think people want to hear what Schmutz has to say on these 7 hiking related questions. All right. And now this is based strictly on what I think of your answer. It's totally subjective, whether or not I agree with you. And so it's always best to give an answer and then give your justification for the answer, because maybe you can persuade me, even if I don't agree with you. Maybe I can see the logic behind your decision.
Sure. Yeah. It's just a healthy conversation. Let's see how it goes.
Exactly. All right. Question number one, we'll start out with an easy one. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles immediately. I used to be, before the AT and the PCT, very anti-trekking pole for no valid reason. But when I got on the AT, I had a buddy who I hiked with up in New Hampshire at my old job. And he said, oh, I have these trekking poles that I'm like never using, and I know you're going on the AT, why don't you try them out? And so I took them. I'm like, whatever, I'll probably get rid of them like day two. And I went out on trail and I realized that it gives my arms and hands something to do while I'm hiking. So I actually hiked the entire PCT with a non-trekking pole user, and they argued constantly that they're fine, like they get used to it, it's no big deal, but they don't know this side of the story and they don't understand it until you fully use the trekking poles. So I'm on the trekking pole bandwagon. One, because it gives your hands something to do. Two, it helps out with stability and keeping your knees healthy. Three, shelters sometimes rely on them. And four, it can be defense if a bear or some sort of animal comes after you. So that's my reasoning. You can disagree, but I'm team trekking pole for sure.
I like that. I've never heard the defense angle before. That's a new wrinkle in the whole trekking pole argument.
Brilliant. It makes you feel a lot more secure out there, I feel like.
That's right. And I love the fact that people who don't use trekking poles, they think that they've got the argument down, that I don't need that. From their perspective, I mean, they've been walking since birth. That's all they need to do. But you're right. They really don't you can't grasp the impact of trekking poles until you've used trekking poles.
Yeah. I mean, it's the old saying, you don't knock it till you try it. You know, it's easy to say, don't use them, they're not great, but I've been on both sides and I've seen the pros and cons. So.
Okay. Yeah. I like the way you introduced that you said that you were anti-trekking pole for no good reason. up until until the trail. I just had a preconceived notion that no, those are dumb. All right, question number two. What's on your feet, boots or trail runners? Or are you going barefoot out there, Schmutz?
I'm not that crazy, Doc. I went trail runners. And I will say my trail runners are a little bit more hefty than most. I know I hiked with a lot of people who use Lone Peaks or other types of ultras. And I feel like they might as well go barefoot because I've seen some of those shoes get so worn down. And people say that they feel like they're just walking on the ground barefoot. I use Salomon trail runners, which is kind of like a hybrid between boots and trail runners. It was the Salomon XA Pro, and it kind of felt sturdy. And I actually got a lot of miles out of my last pair on the PCT. I got like 1,200 miles in one pair, which is probably a little too much, but they really work for me and I really like them. And I feel like I don't get as many blisters with them. So team trail runner, I'd say.
Yeah, when I talk to folks who swear by the ultras, they usually get, you know, 400 miles, 500 miles, maybe six if they're pushing it, but you got 1,200 out of your Salomons.
Yeah, the AT and the PCT, I use the same shoes for both. And I went through six pairs total on both trails. So it was like three and three. And I feel like a lot of people go through four to five pairs. And so I don't know. I really like the ones I use and they work for me, but they might not work for everyone.
Yeah. You know, in life in general, when people go out to a shoe store and they need a new pair of shoes, they typically don't get the same shoes, right? I mean, if they're getting shoes for work or if they're getting maybe tennis shoes, maybe, you know, they don't always get the same thing. And so they're always having to try them on because shoe manufacturers are a little bit different here or there. You got to feel what feels right on your feet. But I have to imagine going through the, you know, six pairs of the Salomons, you don't need to try them on and walk around in the shoe store. You just, you know, you can order them online and you're good to go.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what works, and it's easier to just stick with what you know works than switch to something on trail and risk injuring yourself or having it not work. So,
okay. Question number three. Tent, tarp, hammock, bivy, or cowboy camping? What's your preferred shelter system out there?
Are we talking PCT or other trails or just in general?
Let's talk about that. What is the preferred shelter system for the PCT and what was it on the AT and how and why?
Okay. So, on the PCT, I'd say tent or bivy all the way, but I'd lean towards tent just cause that's what I use. I've seen success with bivvies and whatnot, but, I really like the tent, just having a place to easily pop it up and get away from bugs. Also for weather, I know there isn't a ton of precipitation on the PCT, but it was nice to have a tent and a roof over my head during those times. I also like the warmth of a tent. So if I'm in a cold situation or I'm in the Sierra and it's getting down into the 20s per se, having that tent really helps me stay warm at night, and I like how it blocks the wind and keeps the cold out quite well. But on the AT, I didn't so much like the tent. I did have a pretty bad tent, in my opinion. It was not waterproof whatsoever. It let everything in. It was saggy. It was just not great. And if I were to do the AT again, the Appalachian Trail, I would switch to a hammock. And that's just saying because I hiked with a group of like five or six people. Three of them started with a tent and two out of those three switched to hammocks midway through. And I was jealous for like the second half of the AT just because when it rained, I was on the ground, everything got wet. I had to pack up a wet tent, whereas they could just throw up their tarp on a tree and then set everything up underneath and stay dry the entire time. So with the abundance of trees on the AT, I would do a hammock if I were to hike it again, but PCT tent, AT hammock.
Okay, that makes sense. If you're on the PCT with a hammock, you'd be in a tough spot in a lot of places.
Yeah. I mean, you could make it work in some spots, but there are sections where you'd be just cowboying on the ground and not being able to use it. But
yeah, do you sleep okay in a hammock? Have you tried overnight in a hammock?
I have. I've never really used a good ultralight, like backpacking hammock setup. I've just like used a casual hammock that I would set up at home. It's not really lightweight. It's more of like a car camping type thing. And I've slept in it, not great, but I've heard there are better designs for backpacking and getting a good night's sleep. So I can't really speak to that because I don't have experience. So,
I can take the best 20-minute nap in a hammock that you'll ever see, but try for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours. It's, I don't know. I just can't get comfortable.
Yeah. I understand that. I could see how, I think setting it up, the setup is the most important part. So if you don't get a good setup or pitch, it's probably not great.
Okay. Question number 4, when it comes to your sleep system, are you a sleeping bag guy or are you quilt?
Ooh. Oh man. I am team quilt now. Had you asked me on our last episode, I would have said sleeping bag. I ended up switching to a 10-degree quilt for the PCT and it treated me really well. I liked how if it got really cold, you could clip it underneath you. You could cinch the neck and button the neck around you so it feels like a mummy bag. But it also had a little bit more like wiggle room. I found it to be less constricting than a mummy bag, which I used on the AT. Don't get me wrong, it was warm. But if it was too warm, the mummy bag just becomes an issue because you can get out of it, but then you lay it on top of you and you have drafts on the side. So I think a quilt is just a lot more versatile. So I'd say team quilt.
Absolutely. And now you're a big guy. How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2". Okay. And so The quilt that you had, you found that adequate? Did you buy like a normal quilt size? Or you have to size up a little bit?
I got the long Enlightened Equipment quilt. So it was made for people up to, I think, 6'2 is what they rated it for. And I found it was great. If I had my feet totally in the foot box at the end, it came up to about here, like, which is right around my eye level. So I was able to get it above my head and then wear a hood and have pretty good insulation if it got really cold.
Okay.
So I'd say if you're 6 feet and above, I would go for the long version if you're going for Enlightened Equipment. I can't speak for other brands right now, but.
Okay. Now, how did the 10-degree hold up? I mean, I know you just finished the PCT in November, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. November 5th.
You ran into some temperatures, I imagine. How did the 10-degree hold up in that?
Yeah, so it was the coldest nights I had were, there was like one night in the Sierra that got down to about, say, 24 degrees, which is actually not terrible for going through the Sierra. It gets a lot colder, I'm sure. And there was also one night 3 days from the Mexican border near Mount Laguna that got down to 23 degrees. And we had snow that night. And I was warm both of those nights. So I was really happy with it. And I'd recommend the 10-degree for a southbound hike.
Nice. That's good to hear because I know a lot of people think about quilts and they think, oh, that's not going to keep me warm. But obviously it worked in your case.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Now, when it comes to food out there, question number 5, are you a stove guy, cold soak, or stoveless?
I am a stove guy. And the people I hiked with are going to make fun of me again for this. But I love eating oatmeal for dinner. It's kind of non-traditional dinner item on the trail. But I usually cook a lot of oatmeal, like copious amounts of oatmeal for dinner just to get those calories. And we had a running joke on the trail that I had to get to 10 packets of oatmeal by the end of the trail in one night. So I was eating, on average, I ate like 5 to 7 packets of oatmeal for one dinner. And I was going to do a tenner, is what we called it, which is 10 packets on the last night. And I got to the store at Mount Laguna and they didn't have the oatmeal that I wanted. So I didn't get to do the tenner, but my record was 7 packets and I probably could have eaten more, but I would have just felt sick, but I need a stove for that. So I'd say team stove. I've kind of flirted with the idea of going stoveless and cold soaking, but I just couldn't build up the courage.
Smart man. Now you say packets of oatmeal. Are you talking like Quaker Oats with, you know, like
the like instant
apples and cinnamon and brown sugar, maple
brown sugar all the way. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I think there was one section from Mammoth to Bishop and I packed out like 25 packets of oatmeal, I think. And ate all 25, no problem. It was great.
Now, when you're out there for that extended period of time and you're eating the same thing over and over again, does that ever ruin it for you?
In that instance, no. In that case, I really didn't get sick of it. Everyone kept saying, like, oh, you're going to be done with this after a week. But I think I ate oatmeal for dinner for about almost 2 months, which was crazy. Crazy. I tried to get some protein in there as well. But I didn't get sick of that. I did get sick of bars, just eating like Clif bars or whatnot. I'm not saying one bar is better than the other. I'm just saying bars in general just get old out there. It's something you can get everywhere and you end up having to get everywhere because that's all there is sometimes. I also got sick of like chicken packets and ramen. So I just switched to oatmeal and kind of cut those out of my diet while I was out there because I had it too much.
Yeah. One thing I never eat in cityfied life again is Pop-Tarts or Payday bars. They're forever
Payday
ruined. Yeah. I used king size Payday bars out there for a while because they had good calories. And I liked Paydays back in the day, but man, it just ruined it.
I don't even want to know how many Pop-Tarts I've eaten over the years. Disgusting amount. Yeah. But we also had this snack out there. A lot of people eat Snickers bars. And after a while, you're just eating Snickers on Snickers, and it gets old. So we had this idea to have a Snickamole. So you dip the Snickers in guac. And so it's like guacamole on a Snickers bar. And so we ate that a couple of times. And my friend also sent me this video of a Snickers kind of wedged between two halves of a pickle. And they called it a snickle. So you just cut a pickle lengthwise down the middle and you make a sandwich out of it with a Snickers bar. And you can just put a rubber band around it and gnaw on that on the trail too. So a couple hacks for you.
Just make sure you're paying attention. You don't eat the rubber band.
Dangerous. It's a dangerous game.
Snickamole and Snickles. I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
There you go.
Awesome. Getting creative out there. But what does that say about oatmeal? About Quaker Oats oatmeal, the maple sugar. How good is that? If you can eat it for just days and weeks and months on end and just still
it just hits at night. You get into camp, you hike a long day, fire up the stove knowing you're gonna just indulge in a warm pot of oatmeal. I don't know. It was just something that I looked forward to each day. And other people just couldn't see the vision. But I don't know. I really thought it was something that made my hike more worthwhile, if you will. I don't know.
Yes. Is that a potential stocking stuffer for you this holiday season? Some
maybe. I wouldn't be upset with a stocking full of Quaker Oats. I don't know.
Are you sponsored by Quaker Oats? If not, you should be.
I wish.
All right. Question number six, is life better above or below the tree line?
Oh man. All right. So what's the weather looking like? Or are we just in general above or below? What if it's like storming? I'd say below, but okay. If I had to answer that, I'd say above just because the views are pretty incredible, but it can get pretty scary above the tree line. We had a couple of close calls in Washington. We were near Rock Pass, like 14 miles from the Canadian border. And I was hiking back towards Hart's Pass after tagging the border. And I was just about to summit Rock Pass and the loudest crack of thunder hit the ridge. And we saw this flash of lightning touch down right near us. And the storm just opened up and we had to book it down the other side heading towards Hart's Pass to the trees. So there's some moments above tree line that are pretty terrifying, but the good days make up for that. And I find it more exciting to have the expansive views. So
yeah, I would agree. You can't beat the views. It is exposed, but man, there's something to be said about just having that miles and miles of scenery. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right, Schmutz, down to question number seven, last question in the poll. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Luxury items, definitely. On the last episode, I was telling you how I do go for some lightweight gear. I did swap out some gear to go more lightweight this trip, but I don't really count the ounces, and I don't even couldn't even tell you how heavy my pack was the entire trail. So it I just notice if it's lighter. That's really like I don't really put it on a scale, and I don't try to I guess actively try and cut things to make it that way. I think I actually put things in my pack more than I did get rid of them on this trip. But I do like luxury items. One thing that this guy on the PCT and I did, we had a little frisbee that we would throw around. It was called a zip chip. So every time we got to camp, we would toss that. And that was just something that was really fun. We had decks of cards. I brought a journal. So I had a lot of things that ultralight hikers wouldn't normally have. And I find that to be more rewarding than having a little less weight on my back. So,
okay. Bonus question, full-size toothbrush, you break the handle off, so half-size toothbrush, or you drill holes in the handle, or you just use your finger to brush your teeth, clean your teeth?
Half-size toothbrush.
Half-size.
That's what I used. Yeah. Yep.
All right, Schwartz, I got to do some math here. I got to put this into the John Freaking Mearpod algorithm. I carry the 2. We're going to divide by root 3, multiply by pi. And then we're going to adjust for the temperature 3 days north of Campo. And I come up with a score of 46.
Oh,
46. That's a bit okay. Saner than your parents think.
Yeah. Wow. They're going to be happy to hear that. That's awesome. Hey, I'll take it. I don't want to be too insane. I think the mustache makes me look a little more insane than I actually am.
Throwing people off. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, just a you know, if in case you're wondering about the set B questions, just a sample question. You don't have to answer it now. We'll answer it on your next time through the podcast here.
Perfect.
Sample question from set B, you know, what would be your most useful skill in case of a zombie apocalypse? These are the things to consider. So
I'd be excited to answer those, Doc.
I'm just whetting your appetite for next time.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. All right. Hey, let's back up a little bit before we get too far down the trail. Let's remind people who have listened before, or just tell people in general who are first time listeners to the podcast. You know, what's your background? Where'd you grow up? And how'd you get involved in the through hiking cult?
So I am originally from Connecticut, Southern Connecticut, and I grew up here. I was actually born in Philly, but I grew up, spent my entire childhood in Southern Connecticut. And I eventually accepted a summer position up in New Hampshire, up near the White Mountains, as a kind of a backpacking hiking guide at a summer camp. And through that program, I kind of worked my way up to assistant director there and worked there for about 8 summers. And with that experience, I went on a lot of hikes on the Appalachian Trail through New Hampshire and through the White Mountains. While doing that, I met a lot of people on the AT, because a lot of the hikes we did were around the time that the bubble would be coming through the White Mountains. So I would be leading 12 to 14-year-olds on 3 to 5 day backpacking trips. And we would run into through hikers every once in a while, and I would always encourage them to ask questions and kind of pick their brain and see how insane these people really are in a cool way. So I met a lot of people that way. And one of my coworkers at that program decided to through hike in 2017, through hike the Appalachian Trail. So I ended up chatting with him, and I met a couple other people in that job that had through hiked, and they eventually convinced me to give it a shot. So in 2019, I decided to set out northbound.
That's nice. I'm trying to get into that. With your experience working those summers, was it you that said that you had run into one of my previous guests, or it might have been one of my previous guests who said they've run into you? I don't know if it was Nasty Noodle who said that he met you or was familiar with you, or vice versa. Does that sound familiar? Nasty Noodle.
Did Nasty Noodle hike the AT that year?
I know he hiked the AT. I'm not sure which year, but he was.
Doesn't ring a bell. I may have run into them, but yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think somewhere you have crossed guests with maybe one or more of my past guests. And I would like to think that also by you doing some youth guiding out there and introducing these kids to thru-hikers, you may be responsible for some future thru-hikers out there. Because, you know, when I ask people this question of how did you get involved in the thru-hiking cult, it's usually some encounter with the trail or with a thru-hiker early on in their childhood or adolescence, and it just kind of festers in their mind. They think about it for a while and eventually come around to, you know what, I've got to hike that trail, and they find themselves out there doing that. So you have possibly helped a few thru-hikers to get their start.
It is funny you say that, because now that you mentioned, I did run into one of my former campers through that program on my through hike about a day from Katahdin, a day from the finish. And he was hiking southbound on the PC, on the AT that year. And I had led him on a backpacking trip like 6 years prior to that. I didn't inspire him to through hike, but it was so cool to see him out there hiking and kind of getting out there and doing his thing. So it is kind of cool the impact you can have if you just chat with some day hikers or section hikers and kind of spread that seed of through hiking to the next group.
That's fantastic. Now, last time we talked, I know that you were hoping for a southbound hike of the PCT, and you were actually working on a documentary project called, I think, Sobo Doc is the social media handle that you were using at the time. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we're going to hear how that 2022 southbound hike of the PCT went and get an update on the Sobo Doc. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Thru-hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We are talking to Maddie Schmutz Lyons, and you talked a little bit about the AT in 2019. Was that your first real big experience on the trail? I mean, had you done other maybe segments of the AT or other, you know, hikes that maybe took weeks or months, or is this the first big one for you?
It was the first big trail. I had hiked like a 90-mile section of the AT in the White Mountains before that, through the summer job that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. But it was my first big trail. Yes.
Okay. And you've now had the experience of being on the PCT. What are the immediate comparisons that come to mind when you think about the AT and the PCT?
Yeah, I would say one thing about the PCT that's very different is the constant exposure and sun exposure and vertical exposure. So you're always or very often above tree line. You're constantly in contact with the sun, and that's kind of a mistake I made when I first went out there last year, is not having the proper clothing and having that sun exposure really kind of beat down on me and make me really fatigued and not feeling great. So that's one thing I noticed is the environmental factors on the PCT are very different. It's very dry, hot, can be cold, and you're exposed a lot more. But hiking wise, I would say the AT is a little more intense in terms of up and down and elevation change. But overall, they're just totally different trails. Apples to oranges. It's so hard to compare the two and say which one's my favorite even, or which one I enjoyed more. Everyone always asks me that and I don't know how to answer it.
Yeah.
So those are some immediate differences.
Yeah. You're not the first one to say, about the AT being a little more intense with the up and down. And I always find that a little hard to believe. I mean, I believe you, I've heard of enough people now that I understand and I believe you. But you think in the PCT, with the PCT, you've got the Sierras where you're going over 10,000, 11,000, 12,000, even Forest or 13,200 foot passes, right?
Yeah.
Which on the AT, you don't have any kind of elevation that tops out near to that. But I think the design of the trail lends itself to be a little more intense on the AT, is my understanding.
Yeah, the Sierra was definitely one of those sections where I felt like, wow, this is intense. I'm really out here. And I never really felt that out there on the AT. There was maybe once in like the 100-mile wilderness, but the Sierra and then Section K up in Northern Washington were some pretty intense stretches of trail. And some of the climbs through there were very reminiscent of the AT, if not more challenging. So.
Okay. Now, you had hoped to do the PCT entirely southbound and create a documentary about that experience. How did it go?
Yeah. So when we last chatted, I was only 2 months out from starting the southbound hike. And I followed through with that. I left my job in New Hampshire. I flew out to Seattle, got a ride to Hart's Pass. Actually, I'm sorry. I take that back. We road tripped out to Hart's Pass from Connecticut. We ended up driving from Connecticut out to Washington, a couple friends and my brother and I.
Wow.
And they dropped me off.
That is a road trip right there.
Oh yeah. It was great. We did. It took about 5 days, saw a few national parks, and then eventually made our way to Hart's Pass. And I started the trail north to the Canadian border. I made it about 7 miles from Hart's Pass. My knee injury at the time, which was inflammation of my IT band, that had been an issue leading up to the hike, that kind of stopped me in my tracks 7 miles north. I decided this really isn't a great idea right now. I need to ease into this a little more and maybe do a section that's not as intense. I hiked back to Hart's Pass, past the person that I was meeting up with to hike the entire trail with. He asked me, what am I doing? Why am I going the wrong way? And I told him, my knee's killing me. I got to go back down to town, see what's going on. So I made it 7 miles, hiked back, went into Mazama, which is the town near there, and spent the night. It was a mess. I was super upset. I'm like, why did I drive all the way out here? Why did I invest all this time and money and everything into this hike if I'm just going to make it 7 miles and quit? And I talked to a bunch of people. I decided the next day I was going to give it another shot. This time I went back to Hart's Pass, hiked south from Hart's towards Rainy Pass and Stehekin, and I was able to make it to Stehekin, which is about 50 miles from there, 50 or 60. And the only reason I was able to do that, I realized now, is because I was taking like 7 or 8 Advil each day. I was just pounding Advil the entire time to relieve the pain. And I was confident the first day. I was able to do a 20-mile day, which wasn't the best idea. And by the time I got to Stehekin, my knee was throbbing. And I knew it only got harder at that point. So going south from Stehekin, you hit Section K, which is all the way to Stevens Pass. And that's notorious as being the second hardest section after the Sierra. And going into that, it was a mental block and my knee was killing me. I got about 3 miles south of Stehekin and ended up calling it there because I was feeling shooting pain in my knee. So I turned back and had to find a way to get back to Connecticut. So I was going to book a ferry ticket because the only way out of Stehekin is to hike 20 miles, take a 4-hour ferry, or take a seaplane because there are no roads that lead there. So I was like, what am I doing? I'm getting off the trail. I'm a mess. And now I need to find my way out of this place. So I was going to the general store to buy a ticket for the Wi-Fi that they sold, so you can get on the Wi-Fi. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and he said, are you hiking the PCT? And I'm like, no, I just decided to get off trail. And he said, oh, well, you can come with me. I've got a private boat and I'm driving my daughter and I back to Chelan the next morning. So he said, be at the dock at 6 a.m. He drove me to Chelan and I took a couple buses to Seattle and ended up flying home. So that kind of ended my dream in 2021 of the Sobo hike. And I said, maybe I'll come back next year. And I did. So that was the 2021 story. That was after our last episode. But I felt pretty defeated after that. But this year I came back strong.
That's kinda, that's a heartbreaking tale to start off with, Schmutz.
Yeah. It was definitely a low moment.
Yeah, IT band, man, that is a problem. It's I know a lot of hikers and a lot of runners suffer from IT band pain. And, you know, there's certain stretches you can do to maybe prevent that from occurring or to help that prevent that. But I mean, once it's set in, I mean, you're kind of up the creek for a bit.
Yeah, it was something that I didn't think would ever end because I was having that pain for over a year. I had seen a bunch of doctors about it. They told me it's really not a huge issue and it's something that will resolve. But I couldn't get it out of my head that this is something I can overcome. And that's kind of what led me to get off trail, not knowing that it's something I can work through. And I think over the course of the past year, I realized that and made steps to get through it. And that's what led me to going back this year.
Well, tell us about that. I mean, tell us what you did between getting off trail in 2021 prior to getting on back on trail in 2022. How did you address the IT band issue?
So I got back, I had left my job. So I ended up coming back to my hometown, living here for a little while and getting a job for the year. And in the meantime, I was determined to get back on trail because I knew this is just a roadblock and I need to get back out there. So I decided to start working on strengthening my legs. I went to the gym pretty often. I saw a physical therapist briefly. I started a stretching technique and a massage technique that really helped me a lot. And that confidence slightly grew, but there was always that block in my head that said, I'm doing all these things. I'm just going to go back out there and it's going to repeat. And I told myself, I'll give it one more go and we'll see what happens. And fortunately, things worked out.
Nice. So did you road trip across the nation again, or did you take a quicker route to the trail?
No, my brother and friends were like, we might not go along this time because that took a while, but I ended up flying to Seattle and my buddy kind of met me there. And then I got a ride up to Hart's Pass and started from there, but I flew this time.
And is it the same buddy who you were going to hike the trail with last time?
No, different friends. This is a friend that I had met years before who moved out to Seattle, and he let me crash at his place, and then I got up to Hart's Pass.
Okay. Did he just provide the ride to Hart's Pass, or is he going to hike with you too?
So, actually, I just had a block. He was going to hike with me, and he was going to drive up, and then a day before I left, I was looking at the snow conditions, and that's what led to the change in my plans. And I know we were talking about that. I don't know why I thought I went up to Hart's Pass there for a sec, but I did have a total change of plans this year, very last minute. So I wanted to tell you guys about that. before I left, I had a southbound permit. My plan was to start at Hart's Pass with this friend. And I had my flight booked. I was leaving 2 days later. And I was looking at the snow for the few weeks leading up to that. And it was being really stubborn this year. And the snow in Washington was not melting. So the trail was really treacherous up until late July. And my permit date was July 8th. So I knew that would be an issue. So I made the tough decision 2 days before my flight left to change my permit to a flip-flop permit. And I know my whole plan was southbound, and the project we're working on is revolving around a southbound experience, but I knew that safety kind of came first. And that is part of the experience, is working around those logistical issues such as snow and fire. And so that's going to be part of our story. So I switched my permit, started in Ashland, Oregon, and hiked northbound to the Canadian border, and then got a flight back to Ashland and hiked south. So it turned into a different itinerary, but it was still an awesome experience.
That shows a bit of trail wisdom right there. I know this can't be your pro tip now because we're talking about it, but you had a documentary in mind. I mean, for you, you had enough impetus to make all the wrong decisions and try and make this happen, right? I mean, you had a documentary called Sobo, and you could have said, you know what, I need to go Sobo. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it. And like you said, it could have been very treacherous with dire consequences, but you had the ability to step back from that and say, you know what, safety first. You got to do what's best with safety in mind, and you actually changed the direction of your trip. So you are to be commended for that.
Thank you. It was definitely a tough decision, but I don't regret it one bit. I had the experience of a lifetime, met some awesome people, and still got to hike a majority of the trail southbound. So I got the best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah. So you only hiked one state southbound.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know,
it was a long, it was a big state.
It's probably the biggest north-south state there is. So
yeah, it was a lot.
I don't want to minimize that. So tell us about the northbound part first, Medford to the Canadian border. How was that?
It was great. I started off slow. I knew my knee was still a factor I had to consider. So I was planning on 10 to 14 miles a day, roughly. And I had heard that Oregon was one of the flatter states out of the three. So I was able to kind of ease into it rather than starting in the North Cascades, which was another benefit of doing the flip-flop. And right off the bat, I met this girl named Trash Croc, Natalie at the time. She didn't have a trail name. And these other two, Hot Sauce and Little Legs. And they kind of were doing a little bit more than I was planning on doing. So they were probably doing like 16 to 18 miles a day. So I made the decision to up my miles, just looking at the terrain and saying, I could probably do this. Cause the first day or two, I felt pretty good. So
now had they
got into it.
Were they northbound hikers who had left from Campo?
They were also flip floppers. Hikers at the time. Okay. So Hot Sauce and Little Legs started in Etna, California, and Natalie started in Syed Valley. So they were both going north. So they were just starting their through hike. And the plan was to just get passed by every northbounder at the time, because we were just starting. We didn't have trail legs. And that's what we did. So we hiked basically all of Oregon together. Hot Sauce and Little Legs ended up getting off in central Washington. And Natalie ended up hiking the entire trail with me, which was really cool. So we met quite a few people. We had a trail family going through Washington, which made it incredible. A lot of them were northbounders, so we got to celebrate with them at the Canadian border. And then Natalie and I flipped back south to do California.
Now, I know there's a lot of hikers out there on the PCT, but one of the ones that I was following, and I actually met with him. He was on the podcast, of course, and then I met him in Acton for dinner when he was going through there with his trail family. His trail name was Magnet. So
no way.
Did you happen to meet Magnet?
You know, he was in my trail family.
No way.
Yeah. Can I tell you something right now? It might spoil something later in the podcast. Can I tell you?
Was he with Boomerang?
Not at the time. I didn't know Boomerang.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No.
He was going to be my media recommendation. So
he
is a really talented photographer, posts YouTube videos as well. So Magnet, let's chat. Yeah, that's so funny.
Magnet Northbound, I think, is his Instagram handle. He also has another one, I think, called Extreme Oregon.
Yep.
He lives in Oregon. He's an incredible photographer. And in fact, I got two emails. I got two emails from him today that I need to respond to. So that's really funny that he was part of your trail family. Small world.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. We hiked about 400 miles together, I'd say 300 or 400.
So. That's awesome. I didn't know if you were pulling my leg or not, but you actually lit up when I said Magnet. You're like, what?
Yeah, no, I talked with him a lot. I still keep in touch with him quite a bit.
Oh man, so. I'm gonna have to message him after the interview tonight and let him know that you and I spoke and his name.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so funny.
Now, when you said earlier that you hiked the entire trail with Natalie, did you mean the entire trail northbound, or did she again then join you for the southbound section of the hike?
So Natalie, I met her day two, just out of Ashland, and we hiked all the way to Canada together. Her original plan was to just hike Oregon and Washington. And throughout those two states, we really all got to know each other really well. And she really loved the through hike experience. And so we were able to convince her to do California as well.
Very
and
cool.
So she met me. I flipped south. She stayed at home in Seattle for a few days. I started in Etna because of the McKinney fire. So I wasn't able to do Ashland to Etna. Mm-hmm. And so I started in Etna, hiked 4 days to Dunsmuir, and she met back up with me in Dunsmuir, and we hiked to the Mexican border from there together.
Oh, that is very cool. Yeah. And I think I may have said earlier, Medford to Canada. Medford, of course, is a little town just to the west of Ashland, and there's an airport there. So you said airport, and that's why.
I did fly into Medford, but it's a cool town as well.
There you go. All right.
Yeah.
So you met Magnet and assorted others on the way north, and then you and Natalie reunited in Dunsmuir and headed south.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And how was that that little jaunt through the state of California?
It was a lot. It was a long, long time. And I had heard Nobos saying that, and I know a lot of Nobos might even spend more time in California just because they're getting their trail legs and whatnot. So it took a long time, but it was beautiful at times and sucky at other times. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
And that's another thing I hear about folks that have hiked both the AT and the PCT is one of the main differences. On the AT, you're constantly crossing state borders. But when you start out at the Mexican border, you don't cross the state border in what seems like forever.
No.
Feels like you're making no progress because you're still in the same dang state.
It's crazy. They have on the AT, they have something called the Virginia Blues, and it's 500 miles through Virginia, which is Oregon and Washington. Like Oregon and Washington are both around 500, but California is a different beast. That's insane. Like 1600 miles. It's insane. It felt like it lasted forever, but I think it was segmented pretty well, and you got a different variations of terrain, and so the scenery changed quite a bit, which made it not feel as redundant, which was nice.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of those sucky moments.
Yeah. So I, there was the one at Rock Pass, the thunderstorm, which was one of the only days where it rained significantly on the trail, and we were soaking wet. It was something I wasn't used to on the PCT. On the AT, it would have just been another day, but having hiked through so much sunshine and beautiful weather leading up to that, it was just like, what are we doing? This is miserable. So that was one of them. Another would probably be one of the last nights on trail near Mount Laguna. So I didn't realize, being so close to Mexico, there's still this section of trail that's at 6,000 feet. And it gets weather, especially in November. So it was November 2nd this year, not a few weeks ago at this point. And there was a few days of weather that came through and we got dumped on by hail and snow, and my tent flooded because it wasn't really, I didn't have it strung up to handle wind and rain. It was probably 60 to 70 mile per hour gusts, driving rain and hail. And so we woke up in a puddle, and that was just reminiscent of the AT. But at that point, we're like, we're 2 days from the Mexican border. We're just going to finish this thing. So that was probably one of the suckiest moments.
how about the other side of the spectrum? What were some of the really high moments?
One night in particular in the Sierra comes to mind, and I was hiking with Trash Crocker Natalie and this other guy, Dipper. And we're going through expecting to hike over the passes and then find a spot that's pretty low just to be a little warmer at night. And we got up to Silver Pass, which was one of the first ones that we hit going southbound. And we got up there and it was the calmest weather we've ever seen. There was zero wind. It was incredibly warm for being dusk and almost nighttime. And so we're like, you know what, we're just going to cowboy up on Silver Pass. we looked at the weather, we saw it was going to be clear all night, and so that's what we did. We had an incredible sunset. We made some dinner and then just watched the stars and sunset that night and had an awesome time. So moments like that really contrast with the other days that I was talking about.
Yeah, I think Silver Pass doesn't get mentioned quite enough when people talk about the Sierras. I think it's a little undervalued, because when we were going northbound on the John Muir Trail, we had a moment at Silver Pass. Like, there was five of us, maybe six of us, and mm-hmm. got this great photo of the other five guys sitting in various positions at the top or just below the top of Silver Pass, looking towards the north, and just, you know, lost in thought, lost in their own heads, looking out into the distance at just the amazing views. And it's just a really powerful picture, powerful moment that I remember from the trail. It's just incredible.
Yeah, that's a memory that sticks out for me as well. That pass was cool.
Nice. All right. Now, was that her first through hike of a trail like the PCT?
Yeah. So that was the first long distance hike that she had done, which was really cool.
Wow.
That she was able to just jump right into it and on a whim just say, yeah, I'll hike 1600 more miles.
Nice. Now, how did this impact your Sobo dock? Is it now the flip-flop dock?
That's what people keep asking. I say it's still going to be the Sobo experience in my mind. I really want to talk about the challenges of the Sobo experience and how you need to look at the snow and the weather windows. So in Washington, that's something that I studied for months, like the snow level. In 2021, it was perfect. The conditions were perfect to start on July 3rd. I walked that whole stretch north of Hearts Pass and then to Stehekin, didn't touch snow once on July 3rd. And then this year, people weren't able to safely go through it until mid to late July. So it really depends on the year, and it's kind of hit or miss up there. So the Sobo experience, I want to highlight through the documentary and talk about that. Obviously recognizing that I didn't hike the northern 1,000 miles of the trail southbound, but I can still kind of talk about that experience and how it impacted my decision to flip.
So. Okay. Now, by the time you got to Washington, was that, how far into the hike was that? Was that like 6-8 weeks into it?
Yeah, I think we were in Cascade Locks I think it was July 30th, July 29th or 30th. So wow. it was about 3.5 weeks in, I'd say.
Okay. And the
By
the time you got there, the snow was in a safer condition?
Yes. Yeah. The only section we had some significant snow was Goat Rocks in Southern Washington. Uh-huh. After that, it was smooth sailing.
Got it. All right. So tell us about your plans for the Sobo dock. In addition to talking about the logistics, what else can people expect to find in the Sobo dock?
So we're kind of coming through the footage now. There's a lot. We have about 600 hours of footage that we're looking at. And so I'm working with my brother and the other, my friend, the other producer, and we're kind of just cataloging what clips we have and what we need to fill in this storyline. And I think part of the story is just going to be highlighting, one, those challenges we were talking about, and two, the injury that I went through and how that led to my decision to postpone for a year and ease into it once I got back on trail in 2022. So that's going to be a big part of the story. And then also the people that I met through the experience, because I think a lot of the documentaries of the PCT that I'm seeing is just your normal Nobo experience. It's, you know, it's the Cajon Pass McDonald's. It's going through the Sierra with the snow level still pretty high. So a lot of the videos I see aren't highlighting the other way around and people going that other direction. And I think probably 15 to 20 times on trail, people told us that we're late or we're going the wrong way. And it's just not something you hear about often, is people going south on the PCT. So kind of bringing to light that side of the trail and that experience that people do have every year is a goal of ours.
That's awesome. Now, as a documentarian out on the trail, does that impact the way you do things out there? I mean, do you have a special setup that you know you're recording throughout the day or certain times of the day or in camp? Are you looking for those opportunities to tell your story through video as you're out there?
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, I tried to have it impact my hike as little as possible. So when I was out there, I would do a lot of stationary shots where I'd put the camera down and walk by it just to show the scenery. But a lot of the times I tried to get clips of 0 days or things we're doing in town and showing parts of the trail that aren't often put into those videos. So I definitely didn't want it to become like my personality. I didn't want my trail name to be cameraman or anything. I wanted to be as natural as possible and show the experience as it is without invading the space of other hikers and also not influencing their decisions while on camera, if that makes sense. So I did as well as I could, and I hope I captured the essence of the experience, but we'll see. There might be some instances where I couldn't because I didn't want to compromise that incredible time that I was having out there. So I tried to find a balance, but you know, I did what I could.
Now, do you have a lot of experience or education in film editing or post-production, or do you have some people that you're bringing in to help you with this?
Yeah. So I don't have really any. I think if I were to put this documentary together on my own, it would be like an iMovie production of just clip after clip with some like elevator music to it. But that's where my brother and my friend come in. They went to school for video production and they're really talented. So I'm excited to see what they can do with the rough footage that I collected while out there. So okay.
any sense of a time frame for when we might see something out there?
Yeah, I'd say if I had to guess, and we're still in a really early stage, we're not entirely sure, but I'd say somewhere around March, April, like early springtime.
Okay.
Is what we're shooting for. We don't want to throw something together and we want to really show the experience and do what we can to make it look as good as possible. So we're going to take our time with it.
Well, Maddie, for as long as I know you've been thinking about this, I am really looking forward to it. So I'm excited for you.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. You'll be one of the first we'll reach out to and send you the link to watch. So.
Awesome. Awesome. That's one of the perks for being a podcast. one of the few perks. So
yeah, absolutely.
Hey, tell us about Justice Outside. What's that all about?
So they're essentially an organization that focuses on making the outdoors more accessible for the BIPOC community. So Black, Indigenous, people of color. And their mission is to make that access more widespread nationwide. So we worked with them as part of the doc to kind of spread their message and make sure that the trail and other outdoor spaces are accessible to all demographics. So that's kind of who we're working with, and we are making some donations to them as a part of the project as well. And it's an organization we've been working pretty close with to spread that awareness.
That's fantastic. I love that because, you know, the outside, it's for everybody. And too often we only see a certain demographic out there. And so it's great that you're spreading that message and trying to open up that opportunity for more people. Nice job.
Yeah. When you think of through hiking, it's becoming less and less accessible, in my opinion, just because of the expense of gear and the proximity of natural outdoor spaces to those populations. So as part of the project, we want to, one, highlight the Sobo experience on the PCT, but also show that this is something that very few have access to and have the privilege to access. So another goal of ours in the documentary process.
Okay. Hey, Schmutz, what's other than yours, what's the best trail name you came across out there this year?
Oh, man. Trying to think. I do like Trash Crocs. I think she basically made camp shoes out of garbage. And so obviously it's a little biased. I hiked with her the whole trail, but it's, I think, still hilarious. And the day we met her, we camped out and she pulled them out of her pack and we're like, what are those? And she had two insoles wrapped or almost built like Birkenstocks, just like slide on. And she used Mountain House wrappers, like the top piece that you rip off of a Mountain House. She like curved those over so she could slide her foot in onto the insole. And so her goal was to hike a marathon in these Trash Crocs. And so we got to the section going up to the Canadian border and she's like, this is it. I got to do it. I got to hike to the Canadian border in my Trash Crocs. And she made it like a mile and a half and they just pretty much disintegrated. So that goal kind of didn't play out, but I think that name is hilarious. So.
Wow. You know what? Her first through hike and she already qualifies as hiker trash. I think that is, she checked that box wearing trash.
Right.
Clothes. So nice.
Yeah, she really embraced it. Mm-hmm.
Any other great names out there?
Trying to think of a few. We had Spanx. I hiked with a girl named Spanx who had these really bright colored tight leggings and that were cut off. And she found them in a town because I think her shorts, something happened with her shorts. So she had to get like a thrift store pair of shorts. And she found like pink tie-dye Spanx that she wore under her shorts. So I thought that was hilarious. Other than that, can't think of any really good ones right now, but I'll have to get back to you.
All right. Well, hey, what's next for Schmutz? What's the next big adventure?
I don't have any long hikes on the radar right now. I'm applying for some teaching jobs in the Boston area, and I've already been talking with Aquaman from the Appalachian Trail, and he's living up in Vermont. So we're going to meet up in the Whites and check off some 4,000 footers up there. I have two more to get to the 48 in New Hampshire. So I'm going to do a couple winter hikes and kind of accomplish that goal that I've been working on for a while.
Nice. What do you teach?
I teach biology. So I'm certified 7 through 12. And I've been teaching 7th grade recently, but I want to get into the high school scene as well. So.
All right. If there are any, and I know we have them out there, if there are any high school or junior high school administrators in the Boston area, listening to the podcast, Schmutz needs a job. Reach out. Reach out to me. I'll put you in contact with him.
Let's get Thanks, Doc.
You got it. You got it. Hey, Schmutz, you know where we are?
Is it the pro tip?
The pro tip insight of the week.
That's right. You right. Nailed it. So now is your chance to share with our listeners some trail wisdom to make their next outdoor experience even better. What do you have for us?
So if you are doing a through hike or some sort of long distance hike or even bike packing trip or anything that requires a lot of time, I think one of the best things you can do is keep a journal. And I'm sure you've heard this before, but I can't stress it enough because I kept one on the AT and I still look back on it every once in a while and say, what was I doing this day? And I have all the details and things I did that day. And I started the PCT without one. So I went out there and I got to camp at night and I wasn't really tired super early at that point. So I'm like, what am I doing? I can't fall asleep. And I need something to do before I go to bed. And it got to a point where I'm like, I really want to write all this down and I want to remember the hike. So when I got to Bend, Oregon, I bought a journal and I had been keeping notes on my phone leading up to that. So I started filling in the journal and eventually caught up and kept a journal for the whole trail. So having that to look back on is something that you won't regret. And it does take a little bit of time to write at night or during the day, but it's something you'll thank yourself for later.
Yeah, I have to imagine. I haven't done the full PCT. I've only done sections. I've done the JMT and section here or there of the PCT. But I have to imagine, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months out on the trail, all those days have to kind of bleed into each other in your mind. And so having a journal where you're taking notes on what happened that day and your thoughts and emotions and everything else has to be a great way to kind of keep that comprehensive storyline from start to finish.
Yeah, for sure. Even if you're just writing, like, this is where I camped, this is the mileage I did, this is one highlight I saw that day, done. Like, it doesn't need to be writing a novel, just something to look back on and remember what you did each day, and a highlight from that day is really cool.
Document it. Nice job.
Yeah.
So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Schmutz. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Schmutz, remind us of your social media handle, where they can find updates on your latest adventures.
So I'm on Instagram. You can find me at Matt Lyon. So my name is Matt Lyons, but that wasn't available. So I had to go with the default Matt Lyon and throw the S between there. So that's on Instagram. I'm also on there on SoboDoc, so at SoboDoc on Instagram. And we have a website, SoboDoc.com. You can check that out. And TikTok as well. Same thing, Matt Lyon.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The adventure media recommendation.
You're still on the hook for this one, Schmidt. So, hey, I'm also looking for you to share a recommendation for a book, movie, documentary, website, something out there that's going to help keep our listeners connected to the trail in the off season. We call this our adventure media recommendation. Do you have anything else for us besides Magnet's work?
Oh man, now I'm on the spot. No, I've watched a few others. I'm trying to think of a YouTube channel that I was watching before. I was a friend of mine who I hiked the AT with, Julia Sheehan. I think you've seen her channel. She hiked most of the trail northbound this year as well, and she posted some videos on there showing the northbound experience. So go check her out on YouTube and Instagram, Julia Sheehan, a friend from the AT. So her name's trail name's Rocket.
That's right. And she's also a former guest on the podcast here. Big fan of Rocket and her YouTube channel. And funny enough, she didn't get her trail name Rocket for how fast she was. It's an abbreviation. No. It's a shortened trail name. The full trail name is Snot Rocket. So there you go.
Yeah. Fun fact for you.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, I've got just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we miss tonight, Schmutz?
Trying to think. Wildfires. We didn't talk much about that. So I did run into a couple trail closures. I mentioned the McKinney fire that I had to skip a section of in Northern California. But there was also the Lion's Head closure, which wasn't an active burn, but it was still a closed section that we had to skip around from the Bend area up to government camp in Oregon. So that kind of played a role. And that's something that hikers on the PCT have to deal with a lot these days. So that's also going to be another part of our documentary, I believe, is talking about that impact and how it's not only impacting the trail, but life in California and the West Coast in general.
So. Yeah, unfortunately, that's become more and more common these last few years. Like you said, not only through hikes getting interrupted, but the impact on communities in California. So,
yeah.
All right. Hey Schmutz, it has been fantastic catching back up with you. You're legendary, man. I really enjoyed tonight's episode. That is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family?
Yeah, friends and family. I'd say trail families too. I had the pleasure of hiking with a few awesome groups, one northbound trail family, and then a whole nother group that I met on the southbound leg. So shout out to them. Hot Sauce, Little Legs, Magnet, Thanks, Tuna, and the list goes on. So you guys are awesome. You made the hike incredible. Trash Croc for hiking the whole thing. And my family back home for supporting me. So,
okay. Were there a lot of people going southbound? You mentioned trail family going southbound.
Yeah, there were actually quite a few. Northern California was desolate. I saw maybe two humans in the 100 miles from Etna to Dunsmuir. I saw six bears and two people in that section.
That's a good ratio.
Yeah, it was great. But once we got to like South Lake Tahoe, Sonora Pass area, we ran into a lot more people and hiked with a group from Sonora Pass to the Mexican border. So That was pretty incredible.
That's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thank you for tuning in. Always remember the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if your trash crocs blew out after only a mile and a half in Washington. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.